Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, a talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Tutor Show on the Total Education Network, and it's time for the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity segment. And GJ, I'm really excited because this was my old background in a way, and we're not talking about the product he's pitching. I used to be a professional wrestler, so I never thought I'd get to interview a pro wrestler. So GJ, go ahead and introduce him.
Well, we've been talking about wrestling on our show off and on, you know, due to your background, so I'm definitely excited to learn more. And our next guest, he's been in the wrestling world. When I say his name, everyone will know who he is. He's also an actor. He's an author. He's an inspirational speaker. And then he's created the DDT Yoga. And so we're going to talk more about that. He's also a three-time world champion wrestler. So please welcome to the show, Diamond Dallas Page. Welcome to the show, Dallas.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, DDP. How are you, man? I'm excited to talk to you. Really excited about, again, the surprise. First of all, whenever I thought I was going to interview Diamond Dallas Page, I never thought I'd interview him about a product like this. And I'm sure that the boys, when they heard about this whole deal, it was a surprise to them, wasn't it? Especially with you creating this product.
Yeah. When I first started doing it, everybody laughed at me. But, you know, everybody laughed at me when I became a wrestler. You know, they couldn't believe at 35 years old that I was going to flip from managing that I started when I was 31. They couldn't believe I flipped to try to be a wrestler. And Michael P.S. Hayes, who I was managing at the time, as a Freebirds, literally fell down laughing.
And I know how that is with the boys and how they would do that, especially in the time that you broke in. Again, it was not like today with all the different things. So why did you decide to come up with the idea of DDP Yoga? What was that inspiration?
Necessity. I'm a guy who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga the first 42 years of my life. But I also didn't start wrestling until I was 35. My career did not take off until I was 40, which was 1996. And as anybody who was a wrestling fan, even if you weren't a wrestling fan back in the 90s, you know that 96 exploded wrestling at its all-time fever pitch high from right on up to 2002. And I was lucky enough to have my career take off when wrestling took off. And 97 and 98, I was on top of the world, according to Pro Wrestling Illustrated, rated number four wrestler in the world. And then I blew my back out so badly that three doctors said my career was over.
Wow, and I know how it is. I'm just, again, a journeyman in pro wrestling for 9 years, did it in the minor leagues and stuff, and wrestled in Germany, but my back is hurting me still, DDP, and I understand the pain. And GJ, I'm telling you, you ever get in the ring, you would know how much pain. Again, for our listeners out there that don't understand about professional wrestling, you have plywood and just a little padding, and he took some tremendous falls from some very big guys, G.
Well, my back's starting to hurt just from y'all talking about it. So,
I don't think there's a person out there who doesn't know you can't fake gravity. You know, your body's going to take a beating, and mine did. And, you know, all of it, but the primary years, I wrestled on up till I was, when I came back, I should finish my story. Three doctors told me my wrestling career was over. In less than 3 months, developing a form of yoga that's more yoga-inspired than yogic, because I use yoga position, but I also use rehab techniques. I use old-school calisthenics done with a slow-burn motion, and I developed something called dynamic resistance, which has never been done before. And it got me back in the ring in less than 3 months. So at 42, the doctor said my wrestling career was over. At 43, I was the heavyweight champion of the world.
Wow, that's fantastic, and I see where you developed that idea and the importance. And GJ talks about products a lot, DDP, and G. It's somehow you find certain niches that you never thought would happen, right, G?
Well, absolutely. And obviously you found something that worked. You had something that definitely worked for you to reestablish your career, and then you rose to the highest level better than ever before. So with the DDP yoga program, who's it for? And describe a little bit more about, you know, how they can get it and where they can get it also.
Well, before I get into that, I do want to say that today there are over 40 superstars in the WWE that do DDP yoga.
Wow.
And there's at least 50 of the guys who laughed at me who are all retired that are doing it now. And someone gets added, like, every day. The other day, Al Snow, Tommy Dreamer, Edge. If anybody saw SummerSlam this year, in the SummerSlam where we do the Battle Royal there, number two guy out was Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho got back in the ring because of DDP yoga, period,
wow,
last year. Then took off 6 months to tour with Fozzy. And his first match back after 6 months was the Royal Rumble. He came out in the number two spot. He wrestled for 47 minutes and 53 seconds. He does one workout, DDP yoga. DDP yoga is nearly zero impact on your body, which guys who are athletes and women need. Something that's zero impact because we beat the hell out of our bodies all the time. Bottom line is, nearly zero impact. It's kick-ass cardio. Will dramatically increase your flexibility and strengthen your core like it's never been before. So the people that it's the best for are people who are athletes that are beat up. And just about every athlete over 30, if you play any kind of combative sport, you're going to be beat up coming into your 30s, 40s, 50s, etc. It's also for people who want to lose weight. It was never about losing weight when I started it. Yet I have people who have lost hundreds, and I mean hundreds of pounds. Because of the dynamic resistance, you get a kick-ass cardiovascular workout with next to no impact on your body. There's no other workout that does that. Zero. So it's really for everybody. I've got kids doing it. I got a guy who's 78 years old who had knee replacement 2 years ago, doing it with a group of people for an hour to an hour, 10 minutes to my house for 4 days a week, that if you saw him, you would go, how is he doing that? Repetition. You know, it's like there is no one demographic, but if I was to zero it down to the most people who really want this, people who have back injury, knee injury, athletes or non-athletes, so their bodies are beat up. If you sit at a computer for 10 hours, your body, you might as well have two matches with a giant, you know, with the big show. You know, that's how much your body hurts for being at that hunched over at the damn computer screen. You know, the workout is amazing. You can go to ddpyoga.com, and the testimonies that we have are off the charts. Have you guys seen the disabled veteran, Arthur Corbin, that I helped walk again?
Wow, that's amazing. Really, DDP, one other question on this whole thing is, you discovered this by coming up with this, but who kind of sold you to kind of think about yoga in yourself? Was it just certain stretches and activities you did, or did you create this yourself, or did some people help you in the way to create this whole program?
When I threw my back out and I was back at home, we wrestled 270 days plus a year.
Right.
270 every day in the ring, bouncing around all over the country and the world. Now I was home, and my wife at the time, we were still married, Kimberly was like, baby, you should try yoga to heal your body. I was like, yoga? F that. I'm not doing yoga. I wouldn't be called dead doing yoga. And, you know, she buried me into it, actually.
Well, it sounds like it, and so once you did that, then you experimented with certain things, and then bam, there comes DDP yoga. So I get one thing, GJ, if I'll tell you about wrestling and the boys. When Diamond Dallas, the way he broke into the business, you were a professional wrestling manager, and then he went from there into the ring, and a lot of times guys that start out not being a professional wrestler, but I'm sure when he took it to different people, G, and that's what we talk about on this show all the time, GJ, is people who choose to make a difference by changing something that really works and go after it. And GJ is a testimony to that as well, Diamond Dallas. He's 52 years old, and he's in the best shape of his life and when he was in the military at 18. Isn't that right, G?
Well, that's true, and I had to reach a low point to go back up, just like Diamond Dallas Page. And, you know, I'm also inspired to start yoga just by listening to your story. And I know there's a lot of the guys, the tough guys, say, why yoga? But everyone I know that does yoga definitely loves it. It's had major impact. And just by having you on the show, I'm inspired to go do some yoga, and I'm definitely going to check out your product. So we ask every one of our guests, so what's your 90-day challenge, your health challenge for the next 90 days for yourself, and then also where they can find more information about you one more time?
My challenge is, first of all, I want to explain something, too. Because everybody who's listening to this podcast, I want you to understand that yoga, there's 1,000 different kinds. I developed yoga for people who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga. So if you're one of those people, you will love DDP yoga because it's about the results that you get. How you feel different after the first workout, especially if you've never did any kind of yoga. And when people finish my workout, if they're doing it at my house or something, they'll say, wow, that's the first yoga workout I've ever had. I'll go, well, you really still haven't done yoga yet. I've only done something that's a version of it because, again, I developed it for people who wouldn't be caught dead doing yoga or people who did yoga and love the workout, who aren't into all the spiritual mumbo-jumbo. So that's the one side of it. As far as my challenge, I just set a new record for myself on January 7th because this isn't in the regular workout. This is the extreme workout that I do. You guys know what superhero push-ups are, right?
Yes.
Okay, for people who don't know or listening, you lay on your stomach, you stretch your arms out as far as you can, your feet are going back, you pick your feet off the ground, without bending your elbows, you pick your hands off the ground, then you lift your body off the ground. My record was 40, and on January 6th, I did 50. And I'm talking about after a 57-minute workout, I closed with 50 superhero push-ups. So there's one other guy who's done that on DDP Yoga, and I thought he did 53, but he only did 50. So we're like tied for that record there. So my goal in the next 90 days is to do my future age, which in 2 months I'll be 57. So my goal is to do 57 superhero push-ups. And I'm probably going to do it at a wrestling show because whenever I show up at a wrestling show, I don't wrestle anymore. Someone absolutely gets hit with a diamond cutter. When they hit with a diamond cutter, of course, that's what people want to see me do. But then I'm going to tell people about my new challenge to myself. And in the next 90 days, I will do 57 superhero push-ups. And I'm always pushing myself to the next limit. And at 56 years young, you really can't push yourself to the next limit with weights or running. You're never going to be as fast at 56 as you were when you were 36 or 46 or 26. You're never going to be as fast. You can only go down. DDP Yoga is the only workout that every month I get deeper in my stretches, and you just don't stretch out. I get your cardio jacked up. Then I put you in a stretch. So while you are stretching, you are creating cardiovascular conditioning and you're burning fat, stretching. That no one does. And what my goal is to continue to do on my path I'm on, you know, to continually push my boundaries, to see where I can I just keep going and getting stronger and deeper at 60, at 70. At 80, I want to see when it starts to go back. Because so far, I've been doing it for 13 years. It continues to move forward. So if anybody wants to invest in their, I say, instead of just changing your life, in owning your life, go to tdpyoga.com and invest in the program. You'll get an invitation to Team TDP Yoga, and that is the greatest support group on the planet. When you go to tdpyoga.com, watch the video of the disabled veteran, Arthur Borman. That Arthur's video has played almost 8 million views.
Wow.
It blew my company into a multi-million dollar company. And it was all me helping him 6 years ago, February 7th, which just passed. And he went on a journey, and in 10 months, you will watch not just pictures, but video of him losing 140 pounds and lose his knee braces, his back brace, and his wraparound cane that he called his cup. And watch him lose that and not only walk without his knee braces and canes, but run and sprint.
Fantastic. And also, Diamond Dallas, what are the costs to purchase any of this and the website as well to purchase it?
It's all on the program as far as on the page, but I set it up on 3 different levels because some people just want to try it. And I tell them, if you want to try, invest in level 1. It's $70, $69.95. You get 6 workouts. You get a complete program guide, not just how to do the workouts, how to schedule yourself, but also how to set goals, how to eat. I give you 3 different eating plans. I also get you a poster that breaks down my Diamond Dozen, which is my tutorial on how to break down the moves. You also get MP3s to the workout so that you can not only can watch them on the TV, but after you've learned them, and it's the only workout you can do this with, I give you MP3s that you can put them on your iPod and go out on the beach or in your backyard when it's beautiful out. Not have to be inside. And just listen to the workout and do it anywhere you want it to. And that program is also broken into 3 payments if that's how you want to do it. Or if you're serious and you really want to jump in and own this, you can get the combo pack, which is a $30 savings, which is 11 workouts, the program guide, and the whole poster deal. And if you're a warrior that hopes to get the extreme, well, then you get the extreme pack. An extreme pack you can save $60 on, and that's pound for pound the best investment. But people who aren't ready to go to extreme levels at some point, just get the combo pack. That's what I tell them. And you get an invitation to Team DDP Yoga, and from there, it's all about you putting the work in. From time to time, I'll get people say, "Man, I love what I've heard. I'm going to try your workout and see if it works." And I say, "Hold on, Sparky. The bottom line is, if you work, TDP Yoga works. If you don't work, nothing works."
Well, Diamond Dallas Page, thanks for calling, and best success on DDP Yoga, and especially continued success in everything in your ventures. And thanks again for calling, man.
Awesome, man. And hey, Chitty, if you're in the program, come by Team DDP Yoga and say hello to me, and I'll hit you back, all right?
Okay.
Most definitely. Thanks a lot, Dallas.
All right, take care, Diamond Dallas.
Have a great.
All right, see ya. Okay.
See ya.
Bye-bye. All right, you're listening to Total Tutor Show, powered by Beach Lifestyle Celebrity Segment, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. What I think is really the funniest thing in the world is how we connect with different people, how we learn new things. And I learned so much on this education talk show, and you think a celebrity show, but we're interviewing some very, very talented actors, but I have never really seen any of their work, and they're very, very famous. So I want to welcome the program Don Collier, celebrity Don Collier from High Chaparral. Don, thanks for calling.
You bet, Neil. My pleasure. Good to talk to you.
Oh, fantastic. I'm excited to talk to you as well. Basically, tell our audience a little bit about your career, and then we'll get started with the whole thing about High Chaparral.
All right. Well, I started acting in 1948. My folks worked for an old actor, Francis Lederer, many years ago, and he got me involved with interviews in Hollywood. And I started working in 48 and 49. And then I had a scholarship to Hardin-Simmons University down in Texas. So I went down there for for a couple of years. I came back and I just kind of bummed around a while. And I got back into acting in 1956 and started working in about make enough to get by in 57. And then in 1958, I got the lead in a series called The Outlaws with old Barton McLean and Slim Pickens and Judy Lewis, who was Loretta Young's daughter. And that went for 2 years. And then I did some Bonanzas and Gunsmokes and Have Gun with a Prevel and Rawhide and all the old westerns, you know, that were still around in the late 50s and 60s and early 70s. And then I got hired on the High Chaparral in 1966, and we did the pilot in 1966, and then we did 4 years of the series, and then we'd have a hiatus every year of 2 or 3 months, and I would do a movie. I did I was in 3 John Wayne westerns and one with Anthony Quinn called Flap, which was a good show. It didn't receive much publicity, so it didn't do well, but it was a hell of a show. And then I did a lot of commercials and voice work through the 70s and 80s and into the 90s. And then in all about 2000, I kind of retired, moved down to Arizona, and I've relaxed down here the last 25 years.
Huh. Well, it's very interesting, your career and all the different things, but tell us specifically what, because this is all about High Chaparral and the excitement of the reunion. Tell us how you got involved in that project. Who came to you, and we'll learn more about what's going on from there.
Well, Bobby Hoy, who played my brother in High Chaparral, he got it together, the reunion, in about 2001 or 2, I believe. And I started going, I think, in 2005, around there. And there was quite a few of us still kicking in those days. And as the years have gone by since then, we've lost almost the whole cast. There's about 3 of us left. And we have a good time at the reunion. They had them at the Sportsman's Lodge out in Los Angeles for 4 or 5 years. Now they've had them down here in Tucson, in old Tucson, the last 3 or 4 years. And we have one coming up in March. I forget the exact dates. I think it's March the 22nd, I believe. 3 days in late in March. And there'll be, I believe, 3 cast members. And, of course, Ken McRae, our old unit manager and later a producer, he'll be there. And there's still a bunch of fans that come to these reunions. And it's fun to see them. It's good to talk to them. And we rehash a lot of old times.
So tell me particularly a little bit about High Chaparral now. Before your character, just about the story and what the show is about.
Well, High Chaparral was a cattle ranch that John Cannon settled in the years around the 1870s, somewhere in there. And we were a working cattle ranch, and I think of all the westerns that were on TV, ours was probably the more realistic western show with the ranch hands and the Indian fights and the trouble with across the border with the Mexican ranchers and our ranchers, and we'd work with cattle out there, and we would battle the outlaws and the Indians, and it was just exciting western work. A lot of the old stunt guys worked that show. They were stagecoach drivers and fallen horse stunt guys, and we had them all. It was a fun show to work, an exciting show to work. And it's too bad it didn't last another 10 years. We would have got more good shows out of it.
So tell me a little about your character.
Well, my character was Sam Butler. I was the foreman of the ranch. I was wearing a leather shirt the whole series. I mean, once you establish your clothes in the pilot, then you have to wear them the rest of the show, because you never know when they're going to pull a scene out of one show and use it in another show. so you have to have the same wardrobe. I'd never worked in Arizona in a Western. I worked in California, the ones I've done, and it's warmer down here. And I had that leather shirt that looked great, a Western costume. When I tried it on, looked at it in the mirror. Good looking little shirt. And when I got down here and used it practically, I found out that cowhide is awful in the heat down here. The next year, I had a shirt made out of horse hide. Looked the same, but a lot cooler.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You learned your lesson after how hot you were the first season then, right?
What's that?
You learned your lesson after the first season.
I didn't understand what you said.
I said you learned your lesson after the first season, Don.
Yes, I did. I sure did. However, I had to continue wearing that same, you know, type of clothing because you never can tell when they're going to use one scene in another show. It's pretty married to the clothes you pick out.
So your character, how much time did it take, because you've been involved in a lot of other Westerns, for you to prepare for that character that you played on High Chaparral?
Well, I was, when I got the job at High Chaparral, I was plenty prepared. I'd done a lot of Western stuff. I was a good rider. I was pretty handy with a rope. I'd been around cattle. My folks worked at a cattle ranch out there in the west end of the San Fernando Valley. Well, Prince Letter had a 300-acre cattle ranch out there, and I had worked there in the middle 40s after I got out of the Navy. I worked there for a year, and so I was pretty handy horsebacker when I started working in the picture business. And when I got High Chaparral, I was a very experienced horseman, and I was fine. I rode a horse good and was able to handle cattle and all that. It was a lot of fun.
And so you said a good rider. See, that's surprising. You know, a lot of actors today aren't as character driven. You understand, Don, to be able to you get a lot of stunt people to ride different things and the certain stunts and things like that. So, for example, you said you did your own riding. Did you do your own stunts?
I did a few of them. I could do fights and fast riding on the horses. When it came to doing a fall or anything that was put you in jeopardy or a chance of getting hurt, no, I wouldn't do that. They didn't want you to do that because you had to be available the next day to continue the show. So they couldn't take a chance on you getting hurt bad.
Absolutely. And so it seems like his Westerns was your thing. Absolutely. Was there great success from the show for 4 years? I mean, at least lasted 4 years. Was there a huge fan following?
There was a big fan following. We still have, at these reunions, we'll have probably 200 people that show up. And,
wow.
And the show hasn't been, the last year we made it was 1971. So it's been out of production now about 4 years. It just started rerunning on the Inspiration Channel here about 3 or 4 months ago.
Oh, I'll have to have my kids watch it because we watch Inspiration Channel sometimes. So, yeah, absolutely. They got into Little House. So we're going to have to find this and say, look, Daddy interviewed this guy. I find that really cool. You know, I'm going to tell my father-in-law the same thing because he's a huge fan of Westerns as well. And so that's great to know that you have that fan following, because a lot of actors have certain shows and people forget about them. But it seems like every year you get to go to this reunion, it kind of gives you that the love of Westerns, wishing that, you know, Westerns were still popular in certain ways. Right, Don?
I know. And we have people that come from Ireland, from Germany, from Switzerland, from all over Europe. We have people from Canada. We have people from Australia. It's amazing how far people will travel to see, I hate to use the word celebrities. We're just old working stiff actors, you know, bread and butter actors. But they'll go a long ways to meet with us guys, and we enjoy talking to them. You know, they're good people.
And being with your other cast members that are still alive, it's great to reminisce, isn't it, when you get together every year?
Yeah, this might be the last one. There's Henry Darrell Manolito. His health is not real good anymore. I don't think he'll come to any more of these. Rudy Ramos, who played Wynn the last 2 years, he still comes, and myself. Uh, Linda Crystal calls on the phone. Mark Slade doesn't complete blue, doesn't. He never has participated in these. I don't know why. He didn't work the last 2 years of High Chaparral. They some kind of a disagreement, I think. And, he doesn't show up. So there's only three of us that really show up now, Henry, myself, and Rudy Ramos. And I don't know how long we'll last, but we keep trying.
Well, Don, you have to keep trying for the fans. Just thinking, what types of questions do they have when you go to the reunion and get to talk to the fans that come? What types of questions do they ask you? Cremal?
Oh, anything you can think of. It's I really can't remember exactly what they asked. They want to know about the other actors. They want to know about your riding ability. They want to know about I was cattle ranching and just all kinds of questions. You know, and just I go around the tables and sit and talk with them. And we're all just regular people. And, you know, there's it's enjoyable just shooting the bull with them. You know, it's fun.
It's fun, and you're down to earth actor, so they're like you're approachable, and it just really makes you happy to know that there are people still follow the show, and you should continue the reunions, Don. If you're the one that just makes it out there, do it, because I mean,
I'll go as long as they want me to go. I'll keep going as long as I'm able. I'm 84 years old now, 85 in October, but my health's good, and my attitude's good, and all my kids, well, not all my kids, but four of them are living down here in Arizona now, and the other two are out of the state. But I've got a lot of friends, a lot of relatives and all that down here, so I'm happy, and I'm in good health, and I'll continue to go to these reunions as long as they want me.
All right, well, so what we're going to do, Don, is I'm going to watch the show with my kids, and we're going to have you back on in a couple months to follow up on the reunion in April, let me know how everything went in March, and then ultimately just to talk about the show some more. Because it's very interesting to get a Western success story like yourself to come on and talk about all the different things, but I want to watch some and then start to research and say, okay, Don, I have a few questions about certain things of the show. So I appreciate you calling. Don, do you have a website for more information or anything so that our fans listening can check out more information on you?
I do have a website. It's just donconyer.com. And, is that what you mean?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, go to doncollier.com. Fantastic.
That does it, yeah. It'll take you right to my website.
All right. Well, Don, thanks for calling, man, and we'll be in touch in a couple months, okay?
Been a pleasure, Neil. Call me anytime.
All right. Take care, Don. See ya. Okay.
You bet. Bye-bye. Okay.
You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information, and always excited about celebrities, but I think this one is doing a tremendous work and helping a lot of people, so I want to welcome the program, Robin Goings. Robin, thanks for calling.
Thanks so much, Neil, for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, absolutely, Robin. And really, I guess everyone has their dream to go to L.A., and your story kind of talks about that in a lot of ways, that you moved to L.A. for love, and things didn't work out at first when you made that jump, right? Where did you come from before L.A.? Where were you?
You know, it's funny. Everybody always thinks that I moved to L.A. for love, but I didn't. I actually moved to L.A. with my job. I'm originally from Toledo, Ohio, and I moved to L.A. with my job. I worked for a major airline, and the airline that I was working for, I was in Chicago. And I transferred my airline to L.A. because I figured L.A. is where I needed to be to get involved in the industry, the acting career, and everything else that I wanted to do. I actually met my ex-husband now in Atlanta, Georgia, when I was going to school. We moved out to L.A. separately, and then we reconnected once we got out here years later. So I didn't move out to L.A. for love. I just ended up bumping back into him in L.A. after I lived here for quite some time.
And then found love after that, then, I guess. It was more about your career than moving for him, right? That's what it sounds
right.
like.
Right. It was more about my career as far as the acting industry in the world, and I had a job with the airline first. I moved out here with a job, and I was pursuing my acting career and, you know, the industry stuff.
Which lots of people in LA do. That's their normal thing, right? Unless you make it big time, you have to go and have another job, right? That's pretty much the story.
Exactly. But the thing about my job, which is so neat, I could get anywhere in the world for an audition, a movie role, a part, anything that was going on in the world, I can get there. So I made sure I had a job that I could travel anywhere in the world, so that wouldn't be a problem.
But once you reconnected with your ex-husband, things didn't go well, right?
They didn't go well. His expectation, I guess, for me as his wife, he wanted a traditional wife. He wanted me to stay home, have a whole bunch of children, and not have any dreams, ambitions. I thought that we could be like Clyde and Bonnie and Clyde. We can build our empire. We can both pursue our dreams and goals and build our empire together, supporting one another, having our children, and just doing the fabulous thing and having fun along the way. But he didn't see it like that. He thought that it was only one star in the house. He was it. I was supposed to be happy being his wife, have children, and run the house.
And see, what's too bad is if you, when you allow your, especially your significant other, to stunt them, to not allow them to grow. I mean, you were willing to still have children, but you wanted to have a career. And what's wrong with that, especially if you're talented?
Right, exactly. I don't think anything is wrong with balance. I think when you are married, you know, you do grow. That's a part of living, growth, and it's a part of living. He told me even if you were a teacher and you wanted to go back to school and be a professor, I didn't sign up for that. So I thought that was kind of, you know, that's not where I wanted to be, you know, because I always saw myself being more than just a housewife, even though, you know, staying at home and raising children is a big job. I mean, it takes a lot to do that. But at the time, I only had two children. My daughter was in middle school and my son was a newborn, so you know it wasn't enough for me to do. It wasn't like I have five or six or seven children to stay at home and homeschool them or whatever. But I always wanted a career, and I wanted children. I wanted the whole family structure and the whole family. I wanted the whole thing.
And again, I was checking out your bio, and again, when you were emotionally abused, but this was a famous husband, so I guess what he was looking at, he wanted to be the star and you just be in the background. That's what it sounded like.
Right. Exactly. And the abuse, everybody always thinks that it's physical, but it was emotional, mental, and it became financial abuse as well. And I think that's just even as tough, if not tougher, than the physical abuse, because you carry that same stuff around for years. And even today, I'm much better, but I still question myself, and I still deal with it a little bit. But, you know, it's hard when you're mentally, emotionally, and financially abused. And I always tell everybody, if it would have been physical, I'd have been telling my story from a whole different place.
So, based on what did your famous husband do? What was he? Is he an actor just like you, or was?
Oh no, he's a comedian. So it made it worse. He had the stage and TV and the radio airways to just, you know, tear me up, talk about me, things that weren't true, and make it funny. But it wasn't funny when I'm barely able to get out of bed. I'm clinically depressed. I'm trying to take care of my children. I'm in divorce, you know. So it was really a tough place to be.
Oh, and I didn't see in the background who it was. If you want to mention that person or not, it's not no big deal to me. We can continue to go with what really this education show is about, is this nonprofit organization you started after going through this. Because again, emotional abuse is something that is so difficult to fix in so many ways, because sometimes words hurt more than physically, because it constantly sticks with you forever, and it's very hard to recover from it, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I was in therapy for years. I mean, I was there so long that I started with my therapist, a support group. He saw a need for women who were going through not only depression, but just issues as women, divorce, and he saw the residue and the problems that it caused. So I, along with him, we started a support group for women, you know, going through just life issues, divorce. I have women in there who are breast cancer survivors and everything else. So that was really helpful for me, you know. But I think that once you go through something like that, it's very important to get into counseling or therapy, and that's what helped me through, along with, you know, getting back into the gym and, of course, being grounded spiritually.
Well, and when you're talking about the organization that you started, how did that kind of healed some of the wounds, or at least gave you a new awakening, right?
Right, my nonprofit. I have a support group and I have a nonprofit. Okay. My nonprofit, I want it to be a safe haven for women in transition going through divorce. I want it to be counselors, therapists, lawyers, people who really care. So I'm putting the structure and the foundation into my nonprofit right now because when I went through everything, I found out and realized that it's all about money. If you don't have money, you lose, you know. So I want people really to be a part of this organization who really care because when, at the end of it, my children and I, we were going to be left in a shelter. My lawyers, the system, everybody said, well, you know, when you lose everything, which we did, you have to go to the shelter with your children. And the only reason why we didn't end up in a shelter is because I have phenomenal parents who paid my rent and helped me until I was able to get some money from the court. But they were going to leave us in a shelter. And I said, I don't want another woman or child to go through this. You know, I want them to say, well, if the relationship is bad, this is where we can go. We can get help. People here really care. They're not going to leave us on the streets. Because a lot of times women stay in bad situations because they have nowhere to go. They have no job. They've been at home, and they keep getting abused, and it's a cycle. And I want to break the cycle. I want them to know that there's a place they can go, and we really care, and we can help them.
And through doing this, did doors start opening up for you in your career after this situation?
Oh, yes, it has. I've been auditioning. I went on an audition last week for a Tyler Perry project. And just the other day, Monday, I went on an audition for Showtime, a role on a Showtime series. So I've been doing auditions. I've been doing a lot of print work. I've been just doing a whole lot in the final stages of releasing my memoir. The name of my book is going to be The Invisible Wife, My Struggle Behind the Hollywood Spotlight, where I would talk about, you know, everything I went through before, during, and after a so-called Hollywood marriage. So things have really turned around for me. I'm really happy and I'm really in a good place. I'm excited.
Well, Robin, when your book launches, you're welcome to come on my author's show to talk about it, and we'll highlight it on the celebrity show as well. So I'll make sure I contact your agent to get that taken care of. But tell me a little bit about this MTV project you were involved in. That was a big growth for you as well, right?
Yes. I was involved in a lot of things years ago. And when I got married, it was like my everything came to a halt and I wasn't doing anything. So a lot of the things that I did were years ago. I mean, I've done everything from things on MTV. I was on a reality show. It was like they hook you up with a date and you see if you can end up with this person. It was before reality was even really big. I was a ring card girl. I was centerfold for Ebony Man. I was on the cover of Heart and Soul a few years back. So I've done a lot of stuff, but right now it's like I'm new, still trying to break in because I'm a new face. I've been gone for a while. And when people see me, they can't believe that I'm still here, and they're happy that I'm really still going after it and pursuing my dreams. I just didn't give up and move away and just call it the end of the day, you know?
So through your famous husband in ways, it opened doors, but it went through all the stuff, and you kind of said, I'm going to take a step back and recover. Now I'm ready to go again. The book,
exactly.
the other deals, and how are things going in that end? Like, especially with the auditions and stuff like that, being out for so long, does it help knowing some of the people? Did that help in the process, would you say?
Well, I think it's like I said, like it's starting all over and going in auditions. It's all very new and exciting. It was nervous. I was very nervous my first audition. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this head on. I'm going to get a coach and really go for it. So when I go in the room, you know, I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm landing. I'm getting the projects. I'm not only getting caught in for the projects, but I'm actually getting the projects. You know, so I was really hard on myself. I talked to my agent, and she said, Robin, you're doing well. I'm sending your pictures, and you're getting auditions, and I sent, you know, pictures of my kids over there so we can go in as family stuff, fake an audition. You know, my son is an athlete and an actor. My daughter is a model, and she's doing some stuff in acting as well. So we're a family out here just, you know, making our mark and doing it, you know. So my kids, you're going to see them. You're going to see me. You're going to see us. So we're just going to really light this thing on fire here and go.
Well, it seems like you got a lot of different projects. So involving your kids in Hollywood, were you concerned about that at first to do something like that because of what you dealt with your ex-husband, that you didn't want them to be caught up in this? Or did it just because of being in a family like this, it just comes with the territory? If you have the ability and the wherewithal to be successful, then you just go for it. Is that where they kind of got the bug too, in a lot of ways?
Right. Well, you know, when I was younger, growing up in the Midwest, I've always wanted to do the Hollywood thing. My parents weren't the type to say, okay, we're going to move to Hollywood and we're going to let you pursue your dreams. So my children, they're here and they enjoy it. And my thing is, I'll support them in whatever they want to do as long as they enjoy it. I'm not going to force it on them, but if it's something they want to do, then I'm going to support it and I'm going to help them as much as I can.
And that's the key. And so the one that's a model, has she been getting looked at pretty good? What would you say the opportunities for her in her career?
Well, I think the opportunities for her are unlimited. My daughter is about 5'8" and a half. She's a double zero. So she has the model body and everything. But I think I just have to push her a little bit more because she wants it. But she's like, well, Mom, who do you know? And I'm like, it's not about who I know. It's about how you can light up the runway and what you can do out there. So she gets jobs. She walked in Adrea from Basketball Wise. She walked in her swimsuit. She had a runway show in Vegas for the Magic Show. She walked in that. But a lot of times she goes out for these roles or these parts, and they tell her she's so tiny that they don't have clothes to fit her.
Oh my.
I mean, she's tall and small, you know. So, and she eats all the time. It's just her makeup. So, I mean, most people look at her and just, like, roll their eyes and really be disgusted because even me, if I starved myself, I couldn't be her size. But she has what it takes to do it, you know. So I told her, I said, you know what, we're going to get these pictures. We're going to go to New York. We're going to Paris. We'll do whatever we need to do. If that's what you want to do, then, you know, I'm here to support you, and we can get there.
And
so,
we have
an advantage. We have an edge.
Exactly. So what she needs to do is go on America's Top Model or something, you know, get that opportunity.
Yeah. You know, she actually went on there a few years ago, and she made it all the way up until that final cut. She
got really? Cut. Oh, wow.
For the final cut, she got cut right then and there, yeah. And she was kind of, you know, she was hurt and everything, but I said, you can't let that stop. You can't let that hurt you. You have to keep pushing, keep going for it, because, you know, that's how dreams are. That's how dreams become. You just can't stop just because one person tells you no. You have to keep going, you know?
What she needs to do is try to get herself, based on just that reality show, just getting herself out there continually, like you're trying to now finally get back in the same thing. Because guess what? People will put her on shows, do different things, just based on that experience alone. So that'd be interesting to have her on and talk about that experience with you and growing up being in a Hollywood family and how you kind of – you're in the shadows. So that's one thing she struggles with. Oh, yeah, you go ahead and connect me here.
Well, that's funny you said that, Neil, because I was asked to do quite a few reality shows. We were trying to do Comedy Wives, and then I just signed an agreement to do another show. But last week, my daughter and I actually met with the production company because they wanted to do a show about mothers and daughters. So we're waiting to hear what the outcome of that show would be. They said they would let us know in a week or two, you know, what they decided on us. And then the lady at the casting, she said, well, Robin, I just love your personality. I love what you're doing. One way or another, I'm going to find something that fits for both you and your daughter. And I said, okay, cool. So I just think it's a matter of when and the right situation. You know, I no longer think that it's not going to happen. I just think it's the right situation. I'm talking to my agent, my managers, and my publicist, like, you know, I want to do this, but I want to make sure it's the right situation.
Exactly.
And empower and all the things that I have on the table and all the things that I'm doing, because I want to be a powerhouse and I want to be able to help people. That's my main goal, you know, helping others along the way.
And get your organization out there. That's why you're on the show and to talk about it. But I mean, I'm kind of learning from you and like a cup of coffee, but I'd love to bring you on back on the show for the book, but then also to talk about raising children in this field and how you do it and how you go about it. You're a lot of fun, Robin. So where can we find more information on you? Do you have a website for your foundation and also some of the other stuff that you do so we can learn more about you?
Okay, sure. Thank you, Neil, so much. I really appreciate it. My website is www.robingoings.com. And I must say, my website is being revamped right now. I'm going to have an online store where you can buy Empower wearables. And what I'm going to do with that is I'm going to do the same thing as Susan B. Komen. I'm going to donate a percentage of the profits to my nonprofit to help other women and children, or to a shelter I'm going to connect myself to. So when you buy the products, you're helping another child. child, a woman, you're helping another family. So I'm going to do the same thing with my stuff. And like I said, my website is being revamped. That's www.robingoings.com. And I'm also on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I have my Robin Goings page. And now my personal page on Facebook is full. So I have a director actor page on Facebook. And then I have Empower on Facebook as well. And I just signed up for Instagram. So I'm all over the place tweeting. Involved in what I'm doing and, you know, just enjoying the journey along the way.
Well, I'm going to definitely tweet you out thanking you for being on the show. I'm always on Twitter as well. You'll see me with different celebrities all the time that have come on my show. I had Tim Holmes from the new Oz movie. We've been tweeting back and forth, tons of different people, so you have to check it out. So thanks again for calling,
okay,
Robin.
Sure,
and you're going to be back next whenever the book launches. You're going to be back. I'll contact your publicist. And then I want to talk about your kids at one point in time some more as well. So thanks again for calling, Robin.
Okay, thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
You too. All right, you're listening to Total Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net. For more information, you can email me and Haley at TotalTutor.org, Twitter, TotalTutor. And I'm really excited about this guest because, again, yesterday just started this process of learning about Yellow Rock. And now I'm learning more and more from our next guest. So I'm going to welcome the program celebrity Lenore Andriel. Lenore, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on today. I really do. I really am excited to talk to you.
Well, it's an honor that you're on the show. But for our audience, tell us a little bit about your background in Hollywood and some of the stuff you've done before getting involved with Yellow Rock.
Well, I had I started on the East Coast actually as a producer. I found a very gorgeous but old rundown theater in Elizabeth, New Jersey called the Ritz Theater, and I found an investor. I had an idea to make this into a sort of entertainment theater where we would have everything from ballet to Rodney Dangerfield to the Oak Ridge Boys, you name it. And I was very young at the time. I was the youngest female producer in the country. I was 21 years old. Which, of course, was yesterday, you know, Neil. And I was very fortunate to find a wonderful man who actually believed in the idea. We completely renovated the theater. It was a 3,000-seat theater. And we started doing concerts and performances there of all A-list talent, selling out every night. And by accident, actually, one of our DJs was stuck in the snow and couldn't get down to open the show and host it. And I had to go out myself to welcome the audience. And, you know, going out in front of 3,000 people can be pretty daunting. But once I got out there, I felt like I was just at home. And I was welcoming people into my house, and we were laughing, and I was having a great time. And Rodney Dangerfield was actually the performer that night.
Oh, wow.
And so he was standing in the wings, and he was watching me. And of course, then I introduced him, and he came out, and he did his performances. And we became very good friends. He was definitely a mentor to me, and we greatly respected each other. Using his line, you know, we really had a wonderful friendship. And he, one day we were sitting and talking about it, and I was sort of at the point where I wanted to actually leave and sell off my portion and kind of take another road. And he said, you know, I think you should get into acting. And he said, you know, I watched you basically have this wonderful dialogue with your 3,000 people audience, and I think you're very emotional. I think it's a road you might enjoy, and I did. So I became an actress on the East Coast, first starting in dinner theater in New Jersey, and then moving into New York and doing theater and soaps and everything on up to Lincoln Center. And then I came out to Los Angeles to pursue independent film and theater and television. And that I've never looked back. I've never gone back and missed the East Coast anymore. I felt like that was fulfilled. And at one point, I thought, you know how it is, Neil. You know, you do these independent films, and some of them are really fun and enjoyable, and others are you're just sort of going, oh my God, why did I get involved in this? You know, and so I decided that maybe what would be a really great path for me would be to take that background of producing and try to produce a film with all the wonderful people I had met out here for years doing independent films, and do something where I would be very proud of it as an actress, and surround myself with wonderful people that like Michael Biehn and James Russo and the Spears Brothers, and it was my partner Steve Doucette who decided, he said, you know, why don't we do a Western? And I thought that was a great idea. You know, we had no idea that Westerns were going to be hot. We had no idea. It was just one of those heaven-sent moments. You know what I'm saying?
Right, exactly.
And you just sit back and you go, that's it. That is absolutely a great idea. And so we wrote something for myself that we felt was really spot on. I mean, I tend to play very strong women, so I was performed as a doctor who was sort of between the fictitious Black Paw tribe and the men of the white world. And she loves these people. She loves the Indians, and they love and respect her. And so she's sort of the heart of this movie. And, of course, everything turns bad and deadly. And, it, you know, how else would you do a Western, right?
Right, exactly.
You've got to have that. And it wound up being a real labor of love for us. And it's very much a Western that we feel has a terrific message to it. You know, sort of like the Dances with Wolves type of message.
Right, and, right.
A little bit of that and a little bit of, I guess, Treasure of the Sierra Madre. I had actually never seen it, and people said, you know, this kind of has that feel to it, too. And I said, boy, I'm pretty complimented on that. And so we wound up doing this, and we never knew in a million years that it would be, of course, released worldwide, which it just has been. It's been released nationwide in North America and Canada, and also in Europe, and spreading now to other countries, which is great. And we've received 18 awards.
Fantastic.
Which is really great. You know how that is. I mean, it's you're very happy and lucky to get one or a few, but it's gotten Best Picture many times, Best Director, which is really, you know, as my first time producing a film, you know, this is like my baby, you know, and that was a great feeling. And, of course, we got it for writing, and I've gotten several for Best Actress. So I'm so proud of the wonderful cast that we have and our director, Nick Vallelonga, and my producing partners, Steve Doucette, Daniel Valuze, who owns the magnificent ranch that we shot the entire movie on. And it's very authentic, and I actually look forward to you seeing it.
I hope
so. I will definitely get you a copy.
Oh, thank you. Let me go into I have so many questions, Lenore, and it's so fantastic what you're doing. And I know that my father-in-law is a huge Western fan, and I wanted to go really into this because the story, I think that it's authentic, and that's where I gathered lots of information from yesterday's interview with one of your actors from Yellow Rock. It's authentic. Joe told me this.
Yes.
Bill and Jerry, he basically said this was such an authentic rendition for Native Americans. And I think that's one of the key things. And I think when you said it was your baby, you wanted to make sure, because you weren't just the producer, you were the writer. So a lot of times people produce write things, and the producer changes it. You were very happy to wear both those hats, weren't you?
Yes, unquestionably. I mean, this was also my first time writing a screenplay where it became a movie. And it was not, again, Neil, it was not a path that I thought I'd be going down, but I just realized that my partner, Steve, he's a really great concept guy, and we came up with this story together, and we started doing the research, and we just found that there were so many tribes in California that had been killed off, especially once 1850 happened in the gold rush. And it was just tragic how many of them were killed because of their minerals or their land or just from bigotry and hatred. And we thought, you know, that side, I think that still needs to be told. And so I did create the fictitious Black Paw tribe, but we tried to do it where we were very respectful to the Native American culture and where we had long talks with with Michael Spears, who was our Native American consultant, and the cast, Joe Billingsgerry, who's wonderful, Sam Bearpaw, Rick Moore, all the Zahn McLaren, all these guys gave us great feedback in terms of what they felt their characters could bring to the table and the storyline and how we were sort of bang on. And you know, that was really very rewarding. And I've come to love that culture. I've always loved it anyway. But the more I delved into the research, the more I really wanted it to be authentic. And so did Steve and our director, Nick, and all of us did. And it really is, from the horses and the you know, the tack and the costumes, the teepees, the Indian village that Peter Shirako, who also plays Farley in it, that he created with our set designer, Christian Ramirez. They all did a fabulous job and respected, I think, the path that we wanted to take on this. We didn't want it to just be, oh, it's a Western and it's entertaining. We really wanted it to have some weight to it, some gravitas. And I think we're all very proud of it.
Well, it sounds like you're very proud of it, and I'm proud of you. And I didn't know, I mean, honestly, the way I ended up finding Yellow Rock is somebody else I was trying to book. And then I said, hey, I'm looking for more guests. And they're like, well, you're an education show. Well, on our celebrity show, we educate people.